Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:06 p.m. and that is Central Time. And today is March 14th. Well, I thought we'd kick off with the ratio of the eight Fangman plus Tesla shares, and then divided by the total market cap of the U.S. market. And I think it's quite clear that we've had an upside breakout. So we've had a very decent recovery since the beginning of this year relative to the wider market. The eight largest companies have, I guess, the biggest beneficiaries of both the cloud and 4G and smartphone revolution have rebounded in very emphatic fashion and pushing back up into the overhead trading range. I think it's particularly relevant to highlight that they turned downwards at the beginning of 2022 in advance of interest rate hikes, and they've turned upwards in 2023 in advance of interest rate cuts. So that really does bring us to the big question. So the large cap companies, which have generally tended to be rather cash rich, have rebounded very impressively, and I think they've been led higher by Nvidia. So there's certainly a lot of enthusiasm around the OpenAI release of the chatbots, and Nvidia has rebounded very emphatically from the lows back in October of last year, so well in excess of 100%, and the share price continues to march higher from here, but then also companies like Microsoft, having spent really a ton of money on buying big portions of OpenAI, the share is firming from the region of that 200-day moving average. So what it is definitely suggestive of is that investors are looking at the cash-rich companies with secure cash flows that have access to this new theme as being a bulwark against the uncertainty that we have in the financial sector overall, because their balance sheets are so large that they're almost banks onto themselves. So Apple is also firming from the region of the 200-day moving average, and Google, which has been struggling to find support, was also in positive territory in here today, and it's continuing to steady here in the region of the lows from back in October. Then Netflix was the first of those big companies to decline, and then subsequently was the first to find support, but it is now coming back to test the sequence of higher reaction lows. It's much more consumer, I think, dependent than some of those other companies. Lots of companies now have streaming services, and Netflix's wall of, or I guess its moat of competition is not quite as compelling as that, for example, Apple has. Meta is firing tens of thousands of people, and not only that, but canceling job offerings. And I suspect that we're going to see more of that. That not only are companies going to hire fewer people, but that the advertised positions aren't going to be filled and will be canceled. So the share continues to rebound here. It popped on the upside following the earnings announcement a couple of months ago, or I guess 6 weeks ago, and then subsequently is continuing to hold that move. The cost-cutting measures announced to date are certainly going to help profitability. Hopefully, then, they will abandon this boondoggle of the metaverse and get back to their bread and butter of trying to appeal to the next youngest generation as a marketing tool or a source of advertising revenue, perhaps to be more accurate. Now, then, this, of course, let's just get back to the main point here. These companies are rallying because of reliability of cash flows and access to the AI theme. But CPI ex food and energy came in at 0.5% today versus the expectation that it would be unchanged. Now, I think it's quite relevant to look at this longer term chart here. And we can see clearly that inflation is kind of sticky. It popped on the upside in the middle of 2021 and it hasn't really come back down. And the whole point of looking at CPI less food and energy is that those are supposed to be the volatile parts of the CPI measure. And the reality is that the whole purpose of looking at this index was that you didn't have to look at the volatile stuff. Well, unfortunately, now what we're actually seeing is that some of the food and energy prices are actually coming back down. There was a lot of focus on egg prices about 6 weeks ago, and a lot of panic among people on the internet about having to pay a fortune for eggs, without really considering that the life cycle of the chicken isn't particularly long. So raising a new flock, it does take some time, but it doesn't take a lot of time. And the price of eggs is now starting to come back down. But perhaps much more important than that is that oil prices are down $3 today. And that's a big move on the weekly chart. But the point I've been making for the last few weeks is that these very inert periods of trading in oil don't last. And when they are resolved with a breakout, then that breakout tends to be emphatic. So now we have a downside break, and the oil price is closing out the day below the low that we saw back in January, and certainly below the lows in February. So it is breaking lower. And this is a direct response to tightening monetary conditions, a slowing global economy. The big temptation when analyzing oil is to think that demand is a constant, because more often than not, it is. And the predictions for oil demand growth are generally predictable, that it rises a couple of percent or 3% a year. And that works most of the time, except during global recessions. Then global demand growth goes negative and demand goes down, and usually around the same time that supply is increasing. And then you get a really swift supply glut. And that is potentially what we're looking at right now. And with all of this uncertainty in the banking sector, it's really unlikely that a lot of oil companies are going to be spending a lot of money on new supply. And they haven't been eager to spend money on new supply. So I think it is quite likely that prices are going to drop straight down out of this range, and that we could easily see prices with a 60 handle before very long. And the decision not to spend a lot of money on new supply is probably going to look really inspired for some of these energy companies. So demand will eventually recover, and it will create a supply inelasticity meets rising demand environment. We're just not there yet. But the oil companies will survive because they haven't really overextended themselves in this environment. But that doesn't mean that the share prices are going to hold up indefinitely if oil prices start falling, because it's going to make a lot of the higher priced oil uncompetitive, and then that will kill off the drilling. So then, if we look at the oil service companies, well, they had been rebounding quite impressively, then pulled back sharply last week. Now, the index, or the ETF, I should say, was in positive territory today, and it's right in the region of the 200-day moving average. So if it's going to find support, this is it. If oil prices, though, continue lower from here, it's very unlikely that the oil service companies are going to continue higher as well. And of course, then that is also going to feed through into the demand for the offshore sector. So Noble Energy was not quite able to hold its rebound in here today. Now, Let's just think for a moment about the impact of negative real interest rates, excuse me, not negative real interest rates, just negative yields going positive. So back in 2020, there were about $18 trillion worth of bonds globally that had a negative yield. And today, that's about 1.3 trillion. So somebody has taken an awfully big loss. Now, that's obviously going to be focused in Europe and Japan because that's where the majority of those negative yielding bonds were. But we're also seeing stress being experienced in the US banking sector because of the run-up in yields and the aggressive pace of interest rate hikes. So the 10-year yield has gone from 50 to about 425 basis points, and then it started contracting over the last couple of days, but then it was up quite impressively off the 3.5% level in the region of the 200-day moving average in here today. So the logic is fairly simple. Banks are sitting on big unrealized losses, and since these are tier one assets and they're unlikely to have to sell them in a hurry, then they can be counted as reserves at par. And that all looks fine, except when the other parts of their business start looking in stress, and there'll be a call on some of those reserves. So, what I found really interesting today was that the banking sector pulled back very sharply for 2 days. Then it rebounded, but it wasn't able to hold the move. As soon as yields started backing up again, then the banking sector started to roll over. So we have these big mark-to-market losses. And this is basically the banking equivalent of negative equity. And I find it just painfully ironic that it's taken about 15 years for many of the people who had negative equity on their homes for asset prices to rise enough to absolve them of that pressure. And now banks find themselves in exactly the same situation. They bought bonds over the course of the last 4 or 5 years, and now they're sitting on significant nominal losses. And bonds with very low coupons are not worth the paper they're written on when they're being outcompeted with newer, higher coupon bonds. So then they're going to be sitting on them for a long time. And there's really a limited number of potential avenues. So the first is that business improves really significantly, and then profits go up a lot. They can replace some of their reserves, or they can boost their reserves with newer capital, and then those bonds can be held to maturity with really no problem. Then they could be bailed out. So they could be given new capital basically by a very steep yield curve. And then that would make it a lot easier for the banks to make higher profits. And the yield curve spread is still at about 56 basis points. And this is a monthly chart, so you don't really see the volatility we've had over the last few days. But the spread actually contracted in here today with the rebound in the longer end of the curve. But historically, it has been a really steep yield curve where it gets up to about 250 basis points. That has generally been what has helped to recapitalize banks. And well, the chances are that we're going to get there again. It's just that we're not getting there yet. And then there is obviously the potential that the bond market could recover, and that we, instead of having inflationary pressures, we might in fact have deflationary pressures, and that would create demand for bonds. And those yields would contract, and then those bank balance sheets would look a lot better. There will be a need for something to happen because they're still sitting on these large mark-to-market losses. And sitting on that means that they're not going to be in the same position to be able to make big loans in the future. So there's obviously risk that is now in the sector. And then, of course, you have the fact that the private equity sector is still under pressure. Commercial property is still under pressure. The economy is slowing down. And then companies, banks are going to have to start setting aside more capital in order to account for delinquencies or defaults. So obviously, this is something to consider. And then, of course, we have the Fed meeting on the 22nd. So then we're going to have greater visibility on what the Fed is going to do. And of course, the Fed is in a difficult position because the CPI figure is still quite strong. But what's relevant here too is that the high yield spread has now popped back above 500 basis points. And 500 basis points really is a psychological level. And generally speaking, it's usually when the yield, excuse me, the high yield spread is above 500 basis points that you get trouble in the stock market. And I suspect that that is what we can probably anticipate. Now, if we look at the regional banks index, what we are certainly starting to see is some sifting because they certainly don't have all the same business models. And if we just simply look at the performance within it, then we have a fairly considerable divergence in performance. The best performer up nearly 39%, the worst performer down 18. So this is certainly a sifting process underway to demonstrate those that people want to take a punt on versus those that haven't fallen as much and therefore haven't bounced as much, or those that are still in a rather difficult position. So we're not out of the woods yet with these banks. And then it's also, I think, particularly relevant that we are seeing contagion into the global banking sector. So the Topix Banks Index in Japan has pulled back in an exceptionally violent manner this week. So this is confirming resistance at the upper side of this decade-long range. And there is every reason to believe that that's a peak of at least medium-term significance. And then we can think about Australian banks. And let me see if I can make sure that I get the right one. So when we look at this chart, we can see that it is breaking downwards. There's been a very well-defined range over the last 2 years, and now it is breaking down to new lows below the 1,000-day moving average. And again, if we look at as much back history as we have available, well, then just the pure banking sector hasn't really been firing for a while. Now, the financials in Australia have outperformed, but of course, they're also now pulling down. So it's not simply banks, but it's insurance companies as well. And of course, let's not forget that insurance companies are big buyers of bonds, and they hold those bonds on their balance sheet, and they make other investments too, of course, but they hold on to bonds as money good. And if the number of claims goes up, well, then they are going to have an issue as well. And the S&P 500 Insurance Index pulled back violently last week and then followed through on the downside so far this week. Now, every other time it has pulled back through the 200-day moving average, it has found support more or less in the region of the 1,000-day, but we're quite a way away from that right now. With the additional pop in yields, the dollar was steadier in here today, and gold, having rebounded very impressively over the last 3 days, held on to its gain in here today. This does look like a convincing bounce. And I'm rather kicking myself that I wasn't more alert, and or I guess I was more focused on my shorts and looking at the natural gas oversold condition rather than buying gold over the last 4 days. But it does look like this is a low of at least near term, potentially medium term significance. And I suspect that the dollar isn't going to remain all that strong for very long, and that we're going to see additional downside here. And of course, that would be very much in line with the Federal Reserve cutting rates, or at least pausing. But I do think that there is the possibility that we are going to move into a similar kind of situation to what the Bank of England did, which was they backstopped the pension system in much the same way that the USA has now backstopped the depositors at banks. And then they kept raising rates in order to try and get in front of inflation. And the Bank of England has raised rates to 4%. And that is despite the fact that there are a large number of mortgages are going to reset into higher rates this year. That has not stopped the Bank of England from raising them. So I think we're in a situation that I think most investors are unaccustomed to, which is central banks really are serious. Now we're going to find out in the next week what happens with the Federal Reserve. And if they come out swinging and they don't give a lot of comforting news to the stock market, well, I think then we have to be prepared for additional stress within the banking sector. Now, the S&P 500 is steady and holding the region of the 1,000-day moving average, but it hasn't rallied enough to really send a clear message that the low is in and that we're going to see additional significant upside from here. It's certainly a short-term low, and it's certainly been helped out by those very large companies. But we're still in a difficult environment. Now, when we think about the VIX index, it popped on the upside yesterday, and then it came basically straight back down again in late trading yesterday, and then popped on the upside yet today, and then came back down. But it hasn't come all the way back down, so I don't think we're out of the woods just yet. I do think it's also worth reminding ourselves that peaks in the VIX are much better indicators of major lows than troughs are of highs. So usually major lows in the market coincide with journeys above 50. And even though we had a difficult year last week, there were none of those volatility spikes that took us up to anywhere close to 50. So I do think that's in the future, and that we're still in a difficult stock market environment. We are, however, seeing the signs of speculation that the interest rate hiking cycle is over. People are willing to bet that the ARK Innovation ETF might do better if interest rates start to decline. And most particularly, investors are willing to bet that Bitcoin will do better. Now, Bitcoin jumped in a very dynamic manner yesterday, then popped straight up through 25,000 earlier today, but it hasn't held it. And I think that there's not a lot to be gained by taking big positions ahead of the Fed meeting next week. I think between now and then, we're going to have a fair deal of messing around with probably positive action one day, negative action the next, as investors digest the full implication of significant losses, as much as 600 billion sitting on banks and balance sheets in Tier 1 capital that is supposed to be risk-free. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.